The Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones here with Cecil Hurd again as we continue our 2018 position preview series. We're going to be talking about the tight ends today. You guys are probably going to be listening to this sometime during the Monday or Tuesday of SEC Media Days while we're in Atlanta. We're recording this the week before on Thursday because we're both in the office on the same day, and Cecil and I, we're going to see each other for 4 straight days in Atlanta. We don't need to see each other for the next 3 days before then. So in any event, anything that happens in between now when we record this and when you guys consume this, just keep in mind that sometimes things can change. Tight ends. It's a group that has a fair bit returning. I think there was probably some, there was some curiosity about this group going into last season, probably tracking with the arrival of Brian Daboll, who had been the tight ends coach with the Patriots.
And the departure of O.J. Howard.
Yes. Those were two big storylines going into last year. I think people had pretty healthy expectations of the tight ends. And don't know that we saw one guy emerge. Alabama doesn't lose anyone from last year at this position group going into the season. So they've got 5 guys who are coming back. One who's coming in. It's a group that could see its production increase. We'll be interesting to see what kind of a role it takes with another new offensive coordinator, potentially a new quarterback, and, you know, a bunch of receiving targets who are gone, as we talked about with the wide receiver group.
There's one guy's coming off an injury, and didn't play last year. There's a freshman coming in who I'm not sure. Michael Parker, who I'm not sure how much he'll play. Mm-hmm. I think the returning starter, if you want to break it down that way, and star, you'd say is Irv Smith Jr., who out of New Orleans, who I thought was pretty solid last year. I thought made some plays in the passing game. Again, not an O.J. Howard, was never expected to be an O.J. Howard. A good blocker. Guy with good football background from his dad, and so I'll be interested to see if he's the same guy this year or if he's a little bit better guy this year.
Yeah. Irv Smith, I think particularly later in the season after the injury to Miller Forrestall, did a good job of kind of finding his place. Kind of had a knack for getting open in the end zone. Had, I think, a couple of touchdown catches, despite not posting a ton of receptions overall on the season. Was just a guy who ended up being open in the right places at the right times. And
Henry Ruggs syndrome.
Yeah. Henry Ruggs was the king of that on last year's team, and Irv Smith might have just been the prince. Right. Miller Forrestall probably was the starter or one of the co-starters of that position group, since Alabama does like to play multiple tight ends. Before he had his ACL injury, he was participating in practice in spring. I think by the time of the A-Day game, he was actually out there running around during the scrimmage, although he still had a non-contact jersey on. They were still very careful, didn't want anyone to hit him and re-injure that knee. But by the time fall camp opens up in August, you would assume he'd be full go. That's about 9 or 10 months after his injury happened. And he also received a medical red shirt for that. So there is some depth at the position as well. Hale Henches is a senior who has played a lot, not necessarily a guy who is going to make any game-breaking plays or is going to flash a lot, but I think the coaches really trust him and can do a lot of things. Kedrick James is another guy. Is a sophomore from Texas, and then Major Tennyson is the other player in that group, another sophomore from Texas. James and Tennyson both played last year, probably mostly on special teams, didn't make huge impacts with the offense.
Right, and you know, still could. I think those are guys with some potential. It's just going to – with tight ends now, first of all, the first thing is how much are they on the field? You know, how many formations are you – in that have a tight end that don't just have 5 wide receivers. how much are you running the football? How do they contribute to the running game? And then if they can supplement that by being receiving threats, I think that's a plus.
Yeah. And that's probably one reason why Hale Hinch has been on the field so much, because he does all of that stuff. They can move him into the backfield as a blocker. They can move him out at the end of the line. They can put him in the slot a little bit. He does kind of all of that stuff. He might not be if they've got two tight ends on the field, then the other one is probably going to be more of the threat to catch the ball. But Hale is a guy who's come to fill a bunch of roles for them and has done a good job in all that. He's also a guy that I think they're pretty comfortable putting out there as part of the media. He's not going to be Alabama's representative in Atlanta for SEC Media Days, but he's a good talker and a nice kid, and we hear from him a lot, and we'll probably hear from him more this coming season.
So we hope he catches 50 balls.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Miller Forrestall also was a guy who was allowed to talk to the media before his injury last year, and he's good to talk to. He's got a good sense of humor. He can be kind of dry sometimes, so hope to hear from him a little bit more. I don't know if you picked up on this. Irv Smith last year ended up being like kind of a quasi-star of the postseason for a little bit. There were a lot of questions asked about him because the game was in New Orleans. Right. And so there were a couple of local reporters from the New Orleans newspaper, and maybe also from the New Orleans edition of the Baton Rouge Advocate, that were writing stories about him. It was a little bit funny to see Dabo Swinney be asked questions about Alabama's second or third tight end and what they see from him on film.
Well, you know, Dad was a saint, and you know, so it was a natural thing for them. So you're always looking for I will say this. Dabo was probably perfectly fine being asked about any tight end except O.J. Howard.
So. Did you forget about O.J. Howard this year, Dabo?
What if he was back? How would you like that? No, I wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
But you're always looking for a story. I know you did a story on one of the walk-on tight ends. It's actually a pretty good story that I'll let you tell.
Yeah, Cam Stewart. Might not get to be on the field this year, considering we just listed off five scholarship tight ends plus an incoming recruit would make six. But Cam Stewart is a guy who's a little bit older than most of the guys on the roster. He played a couple years of minor league baseball, I believe, with the San Diego Padres organization. I remember when he showed up at practice during fall camp. I think he was one of the guys who was added to the roster in the middle of camp after school had started. But I'm not sure about that because it was a couple of years ago at this point. But I just remember thinking, who the heck is the 6'8" guy running around there with the tight ends who looks athletic? You know, having been a pitcher, he didn't necessarily have a football body, but he didn't look uncoordinated. He wasn't, you know, he looked pretty well developed, having worked as a professional athlete for a few years.
Right.
And you're wondering, where is Alabama finding 6'8", 250-pound walk-on tight ends?
Who look like tight ends.
Yeah.
And don't look like the doorman at the hotel where Media Days is.
Yeah, and apparently they find him in the San Diego Padres organization. In any event, Cam's a nice guy. He's a really smart guy. I think he might be pre-med. I'll have to go check the story that I wrote last year in New Orleans. But just an interesting guy. And he's having a ball out there. You know, I think he appreciates the experience of getting to play for Alabama, having been a little bit older and having different set of life experiences than some of those guys out there. But if you see number 83 out there and you wonder why you haven't heard about him, or you know why he's not listed on the depth chart or something, that's probably who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's been pitching in the California League for Lodi or wherever the Padres affiliate is.
Yeah. How do you think one thing that you mentioned about the defensive backs preview, which we had just before this one, if folks want to go listen to that, was that when we do these position preview podcast, we're talking about pieces of something that's whole, and the pieces will affect one another, of course. How do you think what could happen with the quarterback position, or potentially even the wide receiver position, or I guess even the offensive line or the running backs, any of those might end up affecting this group of tight ends going into the season?
Well, I think the first effect is Probably with two, although this is not something that's hard and fast. This isn't, they're going to run one offense with two, or they'd run another offense with Jalen.
Right.
But I think they like the idea of putting Tua out there with as many receivers as they can, because he has the ability to find them, you know, make the throws. You put Judy and Ruggs and Devontae Smith and Waddle and all those guys, you're going to end up matching somebody against a slower safety or a linebacker. So you might see more of that. If they're more, you know, of the old Nick Saban offense where you line up and you run the ball, I would say the way that they did at least through 2012, then you see a lot of tight end. You'll see a lot of that formation. I don't know who the mystery emergency Deron Payne tight end will be.
Oh, that's fun. We should come back to that.
Yeah, but you know that you'd see more of your basic 3-4 wide position groupings, and so you'd see more tight ends. Now, tight ends are also H-backs. I guess technically, I guess Ronnie Clark is kind of a tight end H-back.
He's
on the roster.
He's listed on the roster right now as a tight end slash running back, which I assume means he's more of a fullback or an H-back type guy. I don't think he's an on the end of the line tight end type of guy.
Yeah, fullbacks are almost gone now. I don't know where you ever see a fullback, and I've asked Nick Saban about that a couple of times, and you know he says they just can't find him in recruiting. You just don't have that guy, that 6'5", 245 pound guy that slams up into the line. People just don't play football that way anymore.
Yeah, and
the high school level.
Yeah,
you know, and so you can't find them necessarily for the college level.
And the other problem
probably the prototype who wasn't quite the dinosaur Green Bay Pack, you know, Jim Taylor type fullback, but you don't even find guys like Nudie, like Justin Fowler anymore. You know,
yeah.
Who had played a tremendous part in the Alabama offense. There's not a guy, there's not a guy on the roster who I would point at right now and say, oh, well, there's the next Nudie.
Yeah.
You know.
The other problem with recruiting those guys is that if you're not finding the guy who's 5'11", 245 coming out of high school, then you have to go to a guy who's, you know, 6'1", 240 and playing linebacker or, you know, just playing tailback but just running over guys in high school and ask him to not take the ball, to ask him to switch sides of the ball, which is an equally difficult thing to do. You know, a guy who was like that, was a good athlete in high school, is likely to be featured by his offense, and so then to go to college and end up maybe ending up with 12 carries and 7 catches on the season can be kind of a tough sell at times. Or to go to a guy who'd played linebacker or defensive end on his high school team and switch him to offense, that's a little bit of a project. It's just not easy to do any way you look at it now.
Yeah, and Alabama just doesn't recruit, even at linebacker, they don't recruit linebackers like that anymore. That 6 foot tall, 250-pound run-stop guy.
Yeah.
Hole-plugging guy. They just don't – you know, even this year's inside linebacker – Dylan Moses is such an athlete that he could probably, you know, shape his body and do something like that and play some offense for you, but he's much too valuable to fool around with something like that. You know, Dylan's just such a unique athlete and has been since the eighth grade. That he could probably do anything short of quarterbacking the team that you asked him to do. But he's much more valuable to Alabama where he is.
Yeah. You also don't really have a tight end on this year's team like a Brandon Green. You don't have the 6'5 or 6'6, 280-pound guy who is almost just like a sixth offensive lineman.
Right.
It's been interesting. This is going to be my fourth year covering the program, and you've as we've already talked about, you've seen a shift in how Alabama has recruited some of its tight ends and recruited some of its fullbacks. There was one shift, I think, probably from that 2007 to the 2012 period. There's been another shift since then, since those guys that were recruited in the 2012 or 2013 period left, you know?
Right. The first of the Saban team tight ends, really, that he recruited and so forth. This will give you an idea of what Ben's talking about. Michael Williams from Pickens County, who's a tight end at Alabama and a tackle in the NFL. You know, that's
not the only guy who's ever done it.
Not the only guy who's ever done it, but that's what he was. You know, and they would recruit Michael Williams again if the state of Alabama has a 6'6", 265 pound kid that's athletic as Michael Williams. You recruit him and then worry about where you play him later. So they have some tackles, I guess, that could be in a three-tackle formation that could line up at tight end. I'm sure they've got several of them that would like to do it. But I don't know, to get back to what your point is, I don't know who the top secret tackle, defensive tackle tight end guy would be.
I have an idea. Do you want to hear?
Sure, yeah.
I think it was. He's 6'7". Wouldn't you like to see Raekwon Davis?
Raekwon, yeah. He'd create a matchup problem for somebody if he had the technique.
Would you like to be the linebacker covering Raekwon Davis coming out of the flats or something?
No, I'd like to be the quarterback throwing up to him.
I don't know what his catch radius is.
Yeah, I don't know what his vertical is, but if you're playing behind him, you're not going to get over him. And I'll promise you that.
Yeah. I don't know who they end up using in that package. That usually seems like something they add kind of late in the season, you know, if they need it, if they feel like they're going to be a situation where they need that goal line package. Yeah. And for the first couple of years, we didn't even see them run a pass play out of it. They, you know, Clemson had to prepare for it twice, and then it was the third time they saw it when they finally sent Deron Payne out of the backfield to go catch that touchdown pass. We didn't even know that play was in there. Until that moment. And perhaps it wasn't in there the first two times around.
They do have a 350-pound Samoan coming in.
So. Oh, gosh. Wide Vita.
Wide Vita is coming in. So who knows? They'll come up with something.
Yeah. One more question here about the tight ends. This will probably be a little bit shorter than most of the other position previews, just given the fact that there are fewer tight ends than there are guys at other positions. What would constitute a big season for an Alabama tight end at this point?
Oh, I think 25 catches would be a big season.
I was going to say 30.
Yeah.
I think there were maybe a couple guys who had in the 10 or 12 catch range last season.
I think Irv had 14, which, because Calvin Ridley was so much of a target, I think 14 makes you in a group.
Yeah.
As a top returning receiver. I think you're right there with Ruggs and Judy.
All those guys had between 12 and 17 or something.
Exactly. But I think 25. Somebody
25 catches for in the neighborhood of 300 yards.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Six three
touchdowns.
Or four. Yeah.
Yeah, six touchdowns. Five, six touchdowns. Because they will use that package down on the goal line.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a tremendous year. And I don't know that there's a guy. We'll see. I'm not going to limit anybody's ability. I don't know that there's a 50-catch guy in that group. You know, I don't think.
You mean even at the wide receivers? Or?
No, particularly at the tight end.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with that. Only
the wide receivers, there are guys with that ability. They just have so many of them that one assumes, you know, Jerry Jeudy could easily have 50 catches. There's no question about that.
Yeah. You know, O.J. Howard, I don't think, had 50 catches here as a tight end. He might have had 30. So if O.J. Howard is doing that, then I think it's probably pretty safe to assume that might be close to what the ceiling is for a tight end. Although, again, with a new offense, you never really know.
I don't think they'll go, you know. To some version of a spread with an H-back, you know, then you can get guys who really – rack up the catches. But I don't think you'll see that.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us talking about the tight ends here today. We'll be back later on this week wrapping up SEC Media Days. So we hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. If you did, please leave us a rating or a review on iTunes or on TuneIn, however you listen to it. We really appreciate that. Appreciate you guys listening to us. Had a lot of fun doing this podcast, and it's been cool to see it grow over the last year. Coming up next month, I think, on 1 year of doing this podcast, and hopefully have many more to come.
Yeah, any suggestions you have, we certainly amenable.
Yeah, don't email me.
If there's a topic we hadn't thought of that you think we could discuss for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, we'll be glad to discuss it.
You know one we haven't discussed that we could still bring up? It would probably take you and me and Tommy would be to rank the press box food of all 14 SEC schools. We've discussed that before.
I've tried to lay off lately, and it's gotten to be generic. Mississippi State was always good because they did in-house stuff, their own ice cream and, mm-hmm. and all that. So,
yeah. It would be kind of ironic if we did that. I think the one that I would not be able to comment on would be Kentucky, because they have a new press box since the last time I was there, even though I graduated.
I can't remember the last time. I mean, I remember the last time I was there. I don't remember anything about that.
Yeah. It was a very small press box at the time. They've since torn it out and moved it up to the top of the stadium. But in any event, that's another podcast.
I would expect the spread to be better now that it's Kroger Stadium or whatever.
Yeah.
Kroger sponsorship is.
Yeah. Kroger makes good cookies.
Yeah. I would expect some fresh goods.
Okay.
But who knows? You never know. Yeah. I covered the Chick-fil-A Bowl once, and they ran out of Chick-fil-A. So,
what? Was it like a Saturday night game after midnight? The chicken just evaporated?
Well, no. It was a box full of sports writers. Yeah, it was everything has its limits. And the amount of Chick-fil-A sandwiches that it would take to satisfy sports writers with free access, and we're giving a free plug here to chicken sandwiches. The sports writers are going to win, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And the not just the sports writers, the cameramen, the broadcasters,
some of the stadium crew, whoever else comes through.
Yeah. So the next time I was back for the playoff game, but was under the auspices of the Chick-fil-A Bowl, a strict one per person limit was imposed.
Yeah. Okay, folks, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.